Yeah, and so all of you geophiles, I don't know what they're called, the people who are into geography, the landmarks included, I don't know, the geophile sounds bad, but I feel like it's probably not far off. That's what I'm going to go with.
Geophile.
Yeah, people who are super into geology or geography, whatever it is. Guys, I'm going to not edit any of this because I have no pride.
As a result of the outbreak, your city or entire region may be endangered by a lethal agent. If conditions at your location make this a possibility, you need to consider staying in place until the threat has subsided or blown over.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Viral Load Podcast, the disease podcast for this disease world. As always, I'm Andy Pupa.
And I'm still Brett Bales. And woo, we are heading west.
Howdy!
Holding them there, devils.
Woo!
We're lacing up our pioneer boots and we're jumping in the covered wagon. We're getting our oxen plowed or whatever, because we're jumping on the Oregon Trail, y'all.
Yeehaw!
Isn't that exciting? this is a disease podcast, not a history podcast. So we're going to be covering the diseases of the Oregon Trail, and not that Oregon Trail, the one we actually care about. The Oregon Trail, the video game.
Exactly.
Grew up with and learned to love so dearly, cherished these memories of us skipping down the hallways in elementary school towards the computer lab where we jumped on the old original Macintoshes. And, plopped in the floppy disks that were the size of your head and booted up the Oregon Trail, which was just, this is our coming of age story of a video game.
Yeah, this is our, modern warfare. Like, this is, you know, our version of whatever, like, people are Twitch streaming. God. This is serious.
What are 8-year-olds now? What's their Oregon Trail?
Man, I don't know. It's probably, like, one of those games where it's, like a first-person shooter game. It's definitely not.
Is it TikTok? Is that their Oregon Trail?
I don't know. All I know is that, like, were you lucky enough? Like, I knew my computer lab actually only had, so it had almost like these gold computers where 4 computers actually had Oregon Trail and the others didn't have it. So there was a mad dash every time.
Oh my God, that's crazy. Yeah, we did have something like that. And those were like the poison computers.
Yeah.
Those were like, if you showed up late, you got stuck with the non-Oregon Trail computer.
And you're like, come on, just let me have a little bit. Like, you're just like jonesing for some Oregon Trail.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. You would actually line up and queue up behind the kid who did have Oregon Trail on his computer.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, okay, no, you're done. no, Mr. Robinson, he died of dysentery. It's my turn.
And they're like, no, 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 Brett, he didn't die. He's just sick. They need to rest for a few days.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what a weird game for us all to be so in love with, because truly it is, it's an educational game about basically traveling from Missouri to Oregon on a covered wagon. And yet we all became obsessed with it. And I'm thinking, maybe if you're listening to this podcast, you kind of dig the whole disease thing. You think it's interesting. And there's plenty of that to go around in this game. But I think we were all getting exposed to the wonderful, wacky world of, you know, infectious diseases from a young age. We were getting inoculated, indoctrinated, droculated. And that's my hypothesis, and I'm going to stick with it. So that's what we're going to talk about today is the diseases that we grew up with playing the Oregon Trail game. It's kind of a history episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we came on this the subject, I was pumped. Like, I did my research. Like, I wanted, you can still play the game. So I went and played the game. Oh, we'll get into it. I was loving it.
Nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah, I hadn't thought about this stuff in so long, but we're just going to get into it. Before we discuss the game, a brief history lesson, if you will, indulge me, about the actual Oregon Trail. You know, whatever, it's just a real thing. let's get to the game. But let's set up the game by understanding a little bit about what the game was based on. And this would provide us some context for the diseases that were around at that time and that we all died from so many times as children. That just does not sound wholesome coming out loud, does it? How many times, little Brett, did you die of dysentery? How many times? But the Oregon Trail itself was a roughly, give or take, 2,000-mile route from Independence, Missouri, to Oregon City, Oregon, or Oregon, as some people say. This was a route that was traveled by hundreds of thousands of brave, surly American pioneers in the mid-1800s who were immigrating, with an E, west for God knows why. Gold in them, their hills, greener pastures, hopes of a better life. This was the place to go. Head out west, right? This is where everyone wanted to be, and this is how you got there, the Oregon Trail. This was a general route first kind of made famous or pioneered by Lewis and Clark, who made their way west. And this is like kind of bizarre to me to think. Lewis and Clark, 1804 to 1806, that doesn't seem that long ago, but like a lot's changed since then. I mean, like discovering, you know, quote unquote, air quotes, discovering the West Coast. And then now look at us. Here we are.
Yeah. Do you think like this part of the world like was unknown 200 years ago? Like when you think that people are alive right now, that have been 100 years old, that's not that, like that's four generations.
Yeah.
Like, you know, for some people, that's not a lot.
That's interesting to kind of noodle around. After Lewis and Clark came the ubiquitous merchants, traders, and fur trappers, who were amongst the first group of people to really forge this path across the continental divide. But the credit for really blazing the Oregon Trail goes to none other than the missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
Those brave men and women spreading the good word. And chief among them was doctor and Protestant missionary Marcus Whitman, who set out on horseback to spread the good word of Christianity to those American Indians on the frontier in the year of our Lord, whatever. He basically showed that he's kind of credited with showing and popularizing the fact that this trail could be done, like you could survive it, and it could take you further west than I guess people realized before. He showed that it could be done by not just brave, surly, stout fur trapping men, but also women and possibly children. So this, I think, planted the seed in a lot of pilgrims or pseudo pilgrims or pilgrims to be. I don't know how you actually a pilgrim.
I like the thought of pseudo pilgrim people pretending to be pilgrims or like yeah, not like I, for some reason my brain immediately went to undercover people who weren't pilgrims but they were like disguising themselves amongst the pilgrims.
Yep. You know, neither of us are history you know experts, so we're gonna do our best here and we're gonna interpret, and if our interpretations are a little off the mark, hit us up at our Gmail or write us a nice review. So this Marcus Whitman fellow is one of these kind of trailblazing missionaries. And he's making these back and forth trips. Again, not a historian. Don't know how many trips Marcus Whitman made back and forth. I'm okay not knowing that. I think I'll rest easy not knowing that. But it was at least more than one because it was trips with an S.
Yeah, multiple.
But one of his later trips, he met up with a huge wagon train that was destined for Oregon. And to me, I guess when I was a kid, I pictured the Oregon Trail as like maybe one or two covered wagons and being very like isolated and like it was more of like a individualistic kind of a thing, maybe small families. This ended up, I guess, not being true because there were so many people on the trail this year, 1843, became known as the Great Immigration, where hundreds of wagons, thousands of people, thousands of livestock were all basically clogging the artery of the Oregon Trail. This particular trek, like most of the good ones, started up in the spring, in May, lasted about 5 months. I'm told from my extensive research that 5 months is a good time back then. Mm-hmm. But, you know, let us know if that's actually not. But from my understanding, 5 months is a respectable time to cross the finish line.
Yeah, they said that they wanted people to be they wanted to be done before the winter hit. Because if you got stuck in the winter in them hills and those mountains, you were done for.
Well, we know the stories. We know what happened to those Donners. they got real hungry. But this ended up marking like the beginning of the floodgates opening for this grand pioneer migration along the Oregon Trail. And there's where we'll start.
Brett, do you think that Marcus Whitman like holds some animosity to the fact that Lewis and Clark are credited with everything? Like, I feel like Lewis and Clark, everybody knows about, but only if you're on Jeopardy. Like, you know Marcus Whitman. Like, he's the Jeopardy answer, but the dumb person, like, who gets the wrong answer, who, like, wages 8,000, it's like, Lewis and Clark! Yeah. And then the guy who's going to win is like, Marcus Whitman.
Maybe he was, like, a bad person. Maybe he, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I had not, honestly, maybe I learned the word or the name Marcus Whitman at some point, but it was new to me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm sure he was very bitter with or without that fact in his head. Cause I picture most of them being bitter. I don't know why. So the kind of general layout of this trail, you're starting in the middle of the country, Missouri. It's kind of smack dab. I lived in Missouri for a time and it's like right kind of in the middle. It's the furthest possible, like, you can be from any of the coasts, and it's right there in the middle. When you head off and you're heading west, you probably are lulled into like a somewhat of a false sense of security because it's relatively flat. There's no mountains. It's like, you know, the Great Plains. There weren't that many obstacles other than dadgum pesky rivers that you had to cross with all your oxen and wagons and steam trunks and God knows what else.
Yeah.
But that's obviously, there's no bridges and stuff. You got to cross a river with all this stuff. That poses a dangerous problem. But in our research, you were actually able to dig up some actual recovered audio. Don't know how you did this or how you got this, but we have audio of one of those river crossing attempts.
Yeah.
So this is a treat.
We've reached the Kansas River crossing. We can ford it, float it, or wait and see if conditions improve.
Wait and see, wait and see!
This family's built Ford Tough.
Dad, are you high?
I'll tell you what's high, Haley. The heights you can soar to when you work together as a family.
Powerful stuff, really inspiring. But these river crossings were not the only danger on people's minds. They also feared the quote-unquote Indian attack. And so to kind of counter this threat, even though it was a relatively small risk in the grand scheme of things, they would, basically draw their wagons into a circle at night to create kind of a makeshift stockade or like little, protective wall or fortress. And that's where I guess that wagon, circle thing comes from, is they want to. It's like a defensive mechanism.
Yeah, it was so big that there's still a show on right now. I'm not ashamed to say it. My grandfather and I, every once in a while, will kick back, have a beverage, and watch Wagon Train. It's still on, like Turner Classic Movies or whatever. We watch it all the time, and it's literally a show all about the Wagon Train. And every single show opens up with them coming out of the circle and in back into the Wagon Train.
Hey, man, I dig it. Like, doing research for this show made me want to go like read more about wagon manifests and like all the crap that they carried. Like, how many different types of shovels did they take with them?
Yeah.
I want to know now. So like, no, I mean, it's, and again, we were all hooked on this thing and as kids, you know, fidgety little hyper kids, we were hooked on this thing. So like, this is like in our DNA.
Yeah. And it was fascinating finding out like when you looked at it, they traveled an average of 13 to 22 miles a day. And you think like, oh, not too bad. They're riding in the wagon, but they weren't. Because they had to preserve the oxen, they couldn't ride in the wagon unless it was like an infant. So all the people, including like the children, walked the entire 2,000 miles unless you were sick.
Because the wagons were, just to haul your shovels.
Yeah.
And then you had to like walk alongside them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, my God.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the beginning where they're in the Great Plains and... The newbie pioneers, the ones who had not made this trek before, which I would imagine was a lot of them, quickly learned that they were much more likely to be injured or killed by the more mundane causes of the day, which included accidental discharge of firearms, falling off of a mule or horse, drowning in the river crossings, and the cornucopia of diseases of the day. So just your mundane, everyday kind of trail, causes of morbidity and mortality were much more likely to fell a pilgrim than the feared Indian attack. So once they reach the end of the Great Plains, you're now hitting the Rocky Mountains, and this is where things start to get really difficult, because now all of a sudden the trail is steep and has really rocky ascents and descents. And now, adding to that list of mundane, causes of injury and death, you can add the risk from overturned and or runaway wagons.
Oh.
Which is both tragic and kind of a hilarious mental image.
Yeah, that's like a Mel Brooksian way to die. Like you finally make it all the way up the hill and then you get to the other side and your wagon runs you over.
Yeah. Geez. What a way to go. What a tragic, slightly hilarious way to go. So if you manage to kind of survive these various trail threats, your destination, you were rewarded with the fertile, well-watered land of Western Oregon.
Do you imagine that you went 2,000 miles to find out it's going to rain every day? You went forever. You've been bitten by snakes. You've had cholera. You've had dysentery. You've dealt with it all. You lost two brothers, a sister. You married, your aunt because everybody else is dead and you want to keep the family alive.
Leg where your legs used to be because a wagon ran it over.
Exactly. And nobody really gives you your due. And now it's raining every day.
And now you're in Portlandia. And you're like, oh, God.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I better invent some plaid and maybe start a grunge band.
And play the mandolin or the, the fiddle or something.
Oh, God, I don't want to know. But this trip would, like I said, take a good time, 5 months, maybe 6 months, could take up to a year, across this heterogeneity of rugged terrain. Very difficult. So people had to plan accordingly. When these pilgrims were setting off, this was it for them. This was saying goodbye to their homes. They sold everything they owned, sold their businesses, and took only the possessions, that they could take with them. But they had to take I was going to say a boatload, but I guess a wagon load is more apt, of supplies with them. So they had to purchase hundreds of pounds of supplies, including flour, sugar, bacon, coffee, salt, rifles, and ammunition. Yeehaw. So it sounds like a Texas birthday party.
And yeah,
that's what they had to load up their wagon, because there wasn't the Piggly Wigglies along the way. Although we'll talk about this in a second, there were, to meet the demand, these trading posts that would pop up along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess restock. But hence the need for these big giant oxen pulled wagon trains. They had all this crap with them. The most successful item then by far was this covered wagon, which is what we all think of, which is like the classic image in our head. Like when you think of Oregon Trail, probably one of the first things that pops up is like a covered wagon thing. This thing had to be burly and sturdy and withstand the elements, but also dainty and small enough for a team of oxen or mules to pull it day after day after day for like half a year. Most of these wagons were about 6 feet long, or 6 feet wide, I should say, and 12 feet long. They were made of seasoned hardwood, so very, I guess, heavy, hard, possibly beautiful, and covered with large oiled canvases stretched out over wood frames. So that's that wood kind of, or a white kind of tarp looking thing.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to the food supplies, the wagons were laden. And I want to use the word laden here because that's, they're just laden with water barrels and tar buckets and extra wheels and axles for when they're always breaking down. The tar buckets got me kind of scratching my head there for a second, but I'll explain the point of that in a second. It's not just for tarring and feathering Grandpa when he starts stealing your last bit of bacon. So once you have stocked your wagon with all this pilgrim swag, you set off ideally in April or May. This is to give you ample time to beat the winter snowstorms, which again, Donner Party, get dark. This also ensured, and this is a good point, I guess, that there would be enough grass along the way to feed the livestock, which, yeah, like that was their gasoline, right? Just grass.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that when all the grass is dead. You want, you know, you need your ox fuel. What was also surprising to me is that it was not unusual for thousands of pioneers to be on the path at the same time. So again, I pictured this being much more like desolate and like lonely, but it sounds like people were just kind of bumping into each other all the time. This was especially true during these surges like the California Gold Rush, when just a flood and avalanche of people would just be heading west, right? Depending on the terrain, wagons would even be traveling side by side. In addition to single file. So it was that kind of cramped that they had to like have wagons, you know, going along next to each other. Like you said, they averaged 10, 15, maybe 20 miles per day. I can't imagine doing that for like 6 months straight. That just, my goodness gracious. Good thing they had a lot of bacon.
Yeah.
From they would ascend the Rocky Mountains ultimately and, you know, sometimes get caught in thunderstorms or snowstorms. But really it was like the kind of just grueling pace of the whole thing. The like, I guess things we highly take for granted now, just cross, being able to easily cross a river, with a bridge or whatever. These were the things that got them. In addition to the diseases, of course, we're going to get to, cause you're all just screaming, get to the diseases.
we're almost there.
We're going to get there. We have to kind of set the stage. We have to set the mood. The mood lighting has to be just right. But before we do, just a few kind of other random Snapple, I guess, pilgrim facts.
Snapple fact.
Who's that? The Oregon Trail was not actually, okay, and this was a myth buster for me. It wasn't like one single trail. That's what I thought it was. I mean, it was this general kind of route that passed these major landmarks through Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, etc., onto Oregon. But there was never just like one set of wagon tracks heading out west. And I guess it makes sense when I say it out loud, but I guess that was another thing I just kind of pictured was it was this one like pilgrim freeway.
Yeah, it's not like a highway. Yeah, yeah. I thought the same thing. And then I was watching a YouTube video and there was a historian talking about how there was actually like four different tributaries like that came off of it. And a lot of people don't really know that because they just like got sick of trying to tell people about everything. So they just called it all the Oregon Trail.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. You know, like a lot of this episode, it was like, I think dispelling a lot of myths that I developed as like an 8-year-old. So now that I'm revisiting it, slightly more educated, I'm like, oh, I guess that does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So the iconic wagon that I was just talking about that you're picturing, that, you know, from the game and just from your imagination, apparently it was called the Conestoga wagon.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently this was actually fairly rarely used on the actual trail. these were these big old boat-shaped wagons bounce along the prairie, but in reality, it was too large to survive the rugged terrain of the frontier. And instead, most of the pioneers would basically tackle the trail in a more diminutive wagon that became known as a prairie schooner. Isn't that kind of cute?
Yeah, adorable.
Named for the way that their canvas covers kind of resembled a ship's sail. So take that little tidbit to your next cocktail party and impress your friends with.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, these schooners would include just a wooden bed, 4 feet wide, 10 feet long, plenty of room. I guess for one person, but you gotta cram Grandpa in there. Ma's gotta fit, the children's.
Ma, Pa, Larry, Frank, all of them. Tommy,
yeah. Tartan, Edith, Grandpa, yeah, Eden. So these things would be pulled by these teams of oxen and mules at the same kind of pace, 15 to 20 miles a day. And here's where the tar comes in. This is interesting. They would caulk, C-A-U-L-K-E-E-D. They would use the tar to basically make these things water. I don't want to say waterproof, but watertight, I guess.
Resilient, yeah.
Yeah, so that they could ford the rivers and streams.
Okay.
Again, yeah, that makes sense. Because, like, why are they... Okay, I get the water. I get the bacon. Why the vats of tar?
Man, I feel lied to. Billy Mays was trying to tell me about Flex Seal years ago. He just got it from these guys.
It's just tar.
It's just tar.
Yeah.
God.
Billy Mays. Dead, right?
Yeah. Rest your soul, Billy Mays. But still, you know, you did me dirty.
The Pilgrims did it first. But I guess you could probably say that about a lot of stuff. So because people had to pack so much crud into their wagons, and because it was such a rough route, they would end up having to abandon a lot of stuff along the way. Like one of my first big mountain climbing expeditions, I did Mount Whitney, and I wanted to do it in a day, and I packed like way too much stuff, and it was like my backpack was way overloaded, and I ended up having to ditch some stuff, mostly water, along the way, because I'm like, I can't climb this mountain with like 100 pounds on my bag. So I get it, kind of. That's my struggle.
Yeah,
but
same thing, actually. It's the exact same.
Yeah, similar. You know, I had to ford a river, so. Anyway, the trail became this kind of bustling industry for trading posts that would spring up along the way, kind of like, you know, Quickie Marts or Circle K's or whatever, to supply food and equipment. And just like nowadays, there were unscrupulous types trying to take advantage of people, trying to make a buck. There were unscrupulous merchants who would get rich by basically conning these frightened pioneer families that didn't know what they were getting themselves into, conning them into buying more provisions than they actually needed. So kind of overhyping the like perilousness of the journey and saying you need like all this stuff. You definitely need 6 types of shovels. You're going to need a bigger tar vat,
mm-hmm.
whatever. But quickly people would realize, okay, this is way too much crap. I shouldn't have bought so much stuff. And they would have to ditch stuff. So many sections of the trail became these junk heaps filled with discarded food barrels, wagon parts, broken down prairie schooners, dead animals. And it wasn't also that uncommon to see things like books and clothes and furniture scattered about. So a particularly kind of tragic example was the Gold Rush of 1849. Pioneers reportedly abandoned a whopping 20,000 pounds of bacon in one section of the trail.
Wow.
And I'm going to put my skeptic hat on and kind of just ask, how do they know that?
Yeah. I just like 20,000 pounds. Like who's weighing that daily? They're like, another 100 pounds today. You know,
So we'll include, as always, our references in the in the show notes, but you know, I'm just curious. So I don't doubt that, you know, that's a historical fact, but I'm just, who gathered that fact?
I feel like somebody from PETA just threw that in at the end to be like, we've always been bad people.
To shame early us. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the point stands, they were dumping stuff. So the trail itself, if you can kind of put yourself there, is just kind of cluttered with stuff. Again, I picture just like a long expanse of nothing, but apparently it was full of bacon and dead oxen and wagon parts.
Yeah, I'm picturing like a post-apocalyptic like society, like how it's always like littered highways with cars, but just with broken down wagons instead. And, you know, and people who accidentally shot their father with their musket.
Yeah. And kind of like half dead grandpa who's tarred and feathered, kind of squirming on the road. Yeah. So, that, you know, that's cool. In addition to all this stuff, just like now, I guess, people left behind graffiti on what they called register rocks along the trail. So these were painted messages, mottos, sayings, whatever, that people would paint on the stuff they were leaving behind, like wagon canvases or rocks or whatever. And the pioneers making this trip developed this tradition of carving their names, their hometowns, the dates that they were traveling on some stone landmarks along the way. And you can, you know, Google this if you really want to be a dork about this. I mean, I sure did. You can see these register rocks of people making this trip. The most notable one was the Prairie Guest Book that was Independence Rock. And this was a 128-foot tall granite outcropping in Wyoming, otherwise known as the Register of the Deserts, where thousands of pilgrims left their mark on the rock while camping along the nearby Sweetwater River. Those in a hurry, even, this is how important this was to these people. If you couldn't be bothered to go and tag up the rock, you would pay a stone cutter a few bucks to go carve your message for you. That's how the industries and the kind of gig economy, I think, really developed along the Oregon Trail. There were like paid stone cutters to go carve messages because it's like, oh no, we got to go, you know, we got to beat the storm, but I really want to like leave my name and hometown on this rock. Can I throw some money at you to go do that for me?
That's awesome. I feel like this now, the funny thing is like, this was a huge deal back in the day. And now it's just one of those like largest balls of yarn on the side of the highway where like, you're like, do I want to stop at Register Rock? And you're like, I don't know.
Oh yeah, I love those like those roadside attractions. They're delightful. So the wheel ruts left behind this kind of mass immigration are still actually visible today. The last wagon trains crossed in the 1880s, but the mass migration left a permanent mark, or I guess semi-permanent. But it's still around today, and decades of travel carved up certain sections of the trail and left imprints and wore down the grasslands so much that even to this day, nothing grows on them. And you can actually, you know, see the wagon ruts to this day. And actually, the wagon ruts are still visible across all six of the states that once made up the trail. So add that to your bucket list. As more and more settlers headed west and beat this trail into oblivion and were dumping bacon left and right, apparently, it also, in addition to becoming a graveyard for their junk, it became a graveyard for tens of thousands of them. Men, women, and children, and God knows how many livestock bit the dust on the trail, and for many ways, not the least of which, the diseases that we're oh so finally going to start talking about on this disease podcast.
It's all over, people. We don't have a prayer.
Oh, God. Love it. So, just to burst your bubble, if we haven't done so already, a lot of the travelers looked upon the Oregon Trail with this idealistic eye, this kind of romantic I guess, visage of we're going to head out west for a better life and it's going to be great. But of course, it was anything but romantic. Most people who died, and well, the risk of death was actually relatively high, not surprising, would die of diseases or accidents caused by, you know, being inexperienced travelers. Exhaustion, carelessness, crushed by wagons, etc. It was not uncommon for people to be crushed to death beneath wagon wheels or accidentally shot to death. Many people drowned from these perilous river crossings, and travelers would often leave warning messages to those coming up behind them if there was like an outbreak of a disease or bad water or some other kind of risk. They would leave warnings kind of tagged on these rocks or wherever to warn people to, like, hey, there's germs and then there are hills. I think that's kind of interesting too.
Yeah, and this continued on past the wagon train days to where it made it all the way to, like, the Beatnik Society when people were jumping trains. And if there were issues along the train tracks, they would have, like, their, you know, New Age hieroglyphics there too that were all, like, symbols that meant something. Whether there was, like, you know, bad food or somebody was, you know, messing the buck with the drugs that were coming in, that would all be right there. So,
yeah,
you know, things don't move too far.
Yeah. All kind of innovated by these pilgrims. We owe a lot to them. Mm-hmm. The tiring journey, the kind of tiring pace, I just picture, you know, I could probably hang for, like, maybe a couple days before I start really griping. Like, are we there yet? This caused a lot of people to face exhaustion and basically kind of lose their minds. One such was Mrs. Elizabeth Markham, who went insane, it was said, along the Snake River, announcing to her family, who she was traveling with, that she was not proceeding any further. So she just plopped down and said, I ain't going no further.
I'm out of here, y'all.
Yeah.
You leave me be.
Yeah, you go on ahead. I'm going to stay here. I'm done with it. I'm done. Just leave me some bacon. Her husband and her children were then forced to take the wagons and leave her behind because she wasn't going nowhere. Later, though, he ends up actually sending one of the sons back to go get her. Like, go get mom. See if she's cooled off. Go bring her back, son. I'm imagining that's what it sounded like. She actually ends up, they get word. News comes back that the son doesn't make it. The husband is informed that she had actually clubbed their son to death with a rock.
Hate to see it.
Yeah, that was news that he received, I guess, secondhand. So he races back to go try to find the boy, who is actually still alive. And on his return, found that his wife had taken advantage of the family's absence to set fire to one of the family's wagons. So she just wanted to watch the world burn, I think.
Man.
She was, clubbing people with rocks and lighting things on fire. So she truly did just have enough of trail life.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that's the only example of that. That's, like, just one that I saw.
Yeah, no, I read that too. That was the first one that jumped out to me. And I was just like, this is, like, imagine, like, I mean, that's, I mean, we're, I mean, we don't want to get into it, but that, I mean, people are doing that now where they're freaking out to the point where they're doing these outlandish things. And you're like, are you kidding me? But it's just, everybody has their moment. You know, it might be that somebody, you know, somebody bothers you. It might be that your coffee order's wrong, you know, and then that's it.
Yeah. Cause I mean, you're not a Navy SEAL or a special ops. You're going on this, like, really arduous trip with just, like, no background on any of this, I would imagine. So,
yeah, like, and I'm sure, like, her husband was like, it's going to be a great trip. Don't worry about it. Yeah. We got this.
Oregon. Yeah.
Thousands of people have done it. Yeah. Everybody's doing it.
Yeah. You're going to have so much gold, you're not going to know what to do with it.
She's like, all right, Jonathan, if you say so. And by day four, she was like, I'm going to kill all of us.
Yeah. And by day eight, she's clubbing people with rocks and lighting things on fire.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to these kind of mental breaks, Death was rampant on the Oregon Trail, as you would imagine. Approximately one out of every 10 people to begin the trip did not make it to their destination as they died.
Hold on. By my mental math, that is 10%.
Can we confirm that? Well, I'll get on that for you.
Yeah.
So here's a few other quotes to kind of set the mood for you, because now we're getting into the death and disease portion of our broadcast. This is from Miss Ellen James Bailey Lamborn, September 3rd, 1864. Quote, word was passed that a woman had been accidentally run over and killed instantly. The woman was getting down from the moving vehicle. Her clothing caught on the back rod and she was thrown forward beneath the wheel. That was taken directly from a journal entry from one of the Oregon Trail travelers. It'll give you a little kind of sneak peek into how they were living their lives. And the other one from Esther McMillan Hannah, 1852, quote, past six fresh graves. Oh, 'tis a hard thing to die far from friends and home, to be buried in a hastily dug grave without shroud or coffin, the clods filled in and then deserted, perhaps to be food for the wolves.
Mm.
And isn't that just a pleasant bit of writing? The American masterwork, everyone. So thank you, Ellen James and Esther McMillan, for that sneak peek into the life on the Oregon Trail. So this was fun. This sets the scene. That's the Oregon Trail, the place, the thing, the event, the history. So why not make a game of all that fun stuff? That was fun, right?
Yeah.
Make it into a game and give it to school children.
I do love the lengths that people went through. Like, the video games, it's funny now because video games really are demonized because they're, like, some of them are pretty awful. But back in the day, video games were created to teach, like, a new, like, the new era of society, you know, the new, the millennials, like, all of us, like, how to be more engaged in learning. And I guess we took over.
Learn about wagons.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you think of a better way?
Exactly. And I love how that just like showed up in like, you know, 1986. They were like, you know what? Let's make this game about the Oregon Trail. It's about darn time. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Based on all that horrible stuff we just spent a half an hour or more going through, let's make it into a game for children.
And they did. So it ended up being a series of educational video games. They were originally developed in 1971, and it was designed to teach school children about the realities of the life on the Oregon Trail. So
is that a really important thing for school children to know?
Hey, listen.
Life on the Oregon Trail.
Yep. Hey, I'll never forget it, you know. I'll
seared into my consciousness.
Mm-hmm. It's a permanent etch-a-sketch. So what you did was players assumed the role of wagon leader guiding a party of settlers from Independence, Missouri, to Oregon's Willamette Valley via a covered wagon in 1848. They have collectively sold over 65 million copies and have been inducted into the World Video Game Hall of Fame.
The World Video Game Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
What's that?
Suck on that, Sonic.
Wow, what an honor.
So in 1985, the version is the most well-known entry in the Oregon Trail series. I wasn't too far off, 1987. Released for several platforms, including Apple II, DOS, and Macintosh. So the hallmark in the early American elementary schools in the 1980s, 1990s, and early mid-2000s, as many school computers. So popularity in school labs, you know, Brett and I spoke so eloquently about, led to the terminology, the Oregon Trail Generation.
Is that us?
Yeah, that's for sure us. So the video game has been described as an identifying experience for these cuspers, typically described as those born during the late 1970s to the early 1980s. So... Wow. We were just on the tail end. Your 90s kids got no idea what you missed out on.
So, like, our grandparents were part of the greatest generation. And we were the Oregon,
Oregon Trail generation. Exactly. Yeah. Listen, yeah. Again, hey, you know, At least we didn't call ourselves the greatest generation. All right, we called ourselves the Oregon Trail generation. Yeah. We put ourselves
on to invent TikTok.
Hey, listen,
we're doing just fine.
So Smithsonian Magazine observed the Oregon Trail is still a cultural landmark for any school kid who came of age in the 1980s or after. Even now, there remains a constant pressure to revive the series so that nostalgic Generation Xers and Millennials can amble westward with a dysentery-riddled party once again.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And so the game actually is pretty realistic. So that's the funny part. The more we dug into it, the more it made sense. So you can still, by the way, you can still play the game right now. There's an emulator online, and we'll have that in the show notes. So please go and play to your heart's desire. I played, and I beat the game for the first time, I think, because now my brain is developed enough to understand it, and I'm not just trying to go at a grueling pace and kill all the oxen and shoot everything.
I think I had a death wish, actually, when I was in the computer lab. I wanted to see how quickly I could die.
Yeah, and so you put everything on grueling pace, you put them on minimum food for everybody, and then you find out if you can just swim every river. What's the worst thing that can happen?
I'm going to do it with coffee and cigarettes, and I'm going to only take one oxen.
Exactly. So the gameplay travel, so how it started out, is you could choose to be either a banker from Boston, a carpenter from Ohio, or a farmer from Illinois. So you'd...
choice.
Exactly. And so, like today, the banker survives the most. Foreshadowing. money doesn't buy you happiness, but it might keep you alive when you're going across the country on the Oregon Trail. You would leave, like Brett stated, from Independence, Missouri, with a specific amount of money to spend at the supply store. So depending on if you were a banker, a carpenter, or a farmer, you get less and less money for every tier. So the banker started off with the most money so that if you got into trouble, you could just pay your way out of it, like real life. So several landmarks along the trail where players could make decisions, shop for supplies, or rest. So you would purchase supplies that included, and not limited to, oxen to pull the wagon, food to feed their party, clothing to keep the party warm, ammunition for hunting, and spare parts for the wagon. Because your wagon will break down, and when you are a banker, you can never fix it yourself. They're always like, listen, nerd, put the other tongue on there. You're not very good at this.
Yeah, you and your obelisk and your little round banker sunglasses or glasses. I don't know. I don't know what a banker was like.
Yeah, and so all of you geophiles, I don't know what they're called, the people who are into geography, the landmarks included, I don't know, the geophile sounds bad, but I feel like it's probably not far off. That's what I'm going to go with.
Geophile.
Yeah, people who are super into geology or geography, whatever it is. Guys, I'm going to not edit any of this because I have no pride. So the landmarks included the Kansas River, the Big Blue River, Fort Kearney, Chimney Rock, Fort Laramie, Independence Rock, South Pass, Fort Brigger, Green River, Soda Springs, Fort Hall, Snake River, I'm almost done, Fort Boise, Grand Round Valley and the Blue Mountains, and Fort Walla Walla and the Dales. So all the big...
All those landmarks.
All the ones that we've all been to. And so...
I'll be honest, I don't really remember many of these from my my elementary school days.
Yeah, and so you had to pick a party of five, and then you would go ahead and you'd head off down that yonder trail and figure out, when you're going to die or if you're going to die. So it was pretty doom and gloom on the Oregon Trail. They made it seem like pretty much all you had to do was press spacebar, by the way, in order to get moving. So if you just tap spacebar a bunch of times, things would happen very rapidly. So
like every time you press spacebar, that's like moving you forward.
Yeah, you get to go you're supposed to travel like a certain distance every time you tap it until you like run into something and you hit a problem, which happened a little bit. So
all coming back to me.
Mm-hmm. So throughout the course of the game, members of the party can fall ill and not rest, which causes further harm to the victim. So basically, if Brett gets cholera, then we would need to rest for a few days, but that would put you behind, so you might freeze to death in the end. Fun stuff. So the party can die from various causes and diseases. The player's oxen are also subject to injury or death or being stolen. Infectious diseases included measles, typhoid, cholera, dysentery. Mm-hmm. Other causes that you could die from were snake bite, exhaustion, drowning, or accidental gunshot wounds.
What a game for children.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Based on all of this, you played the game. I did a little digging into the history of all this and some of the diseases, which I promise we were going to talk about. But first, I want to kind of offer a quiz on just a few questions just to gauge your kind of understanding of the Oregon Trail. This is going to be our segue into actually kind of talking about some of these diseases that killed people back in them days. Let's start with question one. Are you ready for this?
Whew. All right. All right. Let me limber up a little bit. Okay. All right. I'm ready.
Yeah. Okay. Which of these Oregon Trail ailments can be caused by viruses, bacteria, and even amoebas? The answer choices: dysentery, diphtheria, cholera, typhoid fever.
I'm going to go with dysentery.
Good, because I clicked it, and I don't think you can unclick it. okay. A cook named Mary Malone famously spread which Oregon Trail disease in the early 1900s? The choices are cholera, malaria, flu, and typhoid fever.
Brett, the answer's got to be typhoid fever.
Checking typhoid fever. Here's a word problem for you. Let's say Roger has a cold.
All right.
Which of these was not a common treatment for coughs on the Oregon Trail? Castor oil, vinegar, turpentine, or whiskey?
Ooh, oh man.
So not a
common. I'm going to go with turpentine.
Okay. That's wrong.
No way!
So I should say the first two you got right. That must be what the little green check arrow is for. And the little red X means you got it wrong.
Oh man. So, it's a good thing you're a teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. You're seeing it. You're seeing it, man. Okay. So let's see. Which of these, and let me just say Roger has a cold. What did that have to do with anything?
Okay, he doesn't have cholera.
Let's set this. Yeah, here. This will help establish this question. Roger has a cold. Which of these is not a common treatment? Anyway, which of these Oregon Trail illnesses spreads via air or is airborne? Diphtheria, dysentery, typhoid fever, or snake bite?
I'm going to go with snake bite. Was it... hold on. I don't know much about diphtheria. I'm going to go with diphtheria just because I don't know.
Okay. That's right.
Oh, diphtheria. See? Yeah. God. You know what, guys?
You didn't say snake bite.
Yeah.
I mean, technically a cobra, maybe? I
don't know. just spitting venom at you?
Can you imagine if snakes could fly? Isn't that
terrifying?
Scary? Wow. This disease was more prevalent on the Great Plains, but less so as settlers got into higher elevations. Cholera, flu, typhoid fever, or measles.
Ooh.
So this was a disease of the plains, but then it was less of a risk when they got up into the mountains.
I'm going to go with cholera.
Cholera is correct, sir.
Ooh.
The U.S. is currently seeing outbreaks in which of these Oregon Trail illnesses, despite immunization efforts? Cholera, dysentery, measles, or tuberculosis?
Tuberculosis.
No, sir.
Ooh,
that's
is it
not correct?
Is it measles and mumps?
Measles is a strong possibility, but we're going to talk about some of this, so don't you wait.
Oh,
I'm not
man.
Done. I'm not done with you yet.
Oh,
a few more to go, because this is just too good. Okay, this time Claire has measles. Claire, okay? So this is...
All right, Claire
has measles.
Mm-hmm.
The measles virus is thought to have evolved from which of these viruses? Rinderpest, which sounds like an Icelandic metal band. Herpes, varicella, or rhinovirus?
Ooh, varicella.
No, sir.
I had no idea. Nothing on that one.
I don't blame you. That's Claire has measles. That didn't give it away. It's Claire. Okay.
God damn it, Claire.
Which Oregon Trail disease is not contagious? Cholera, gangrene, dysentery, measles.
Gangrene.
Correct. Yes.
Cut that foot off. It's going to get bad.
Can you imagine? I guess that's zombieism. Okay. Now you have dysentery.
Full stop.
You have dysentery. Which medicine should you get from the general store? Calomel, opium, laudanum, quinine.
Ooh. I'm going to go with laudanum. What is laudanum for 500?
No, it's not laudanum. We'll get into it. Everyone in your party has died. This disease was the most deadly of the Oregon Trail infections. Pneumonia, measles, cholera, or scarlet fever?
Measles.
No, sir.
I thought measles was one of the most dangerous ones. Is that not correct?
The most infectious.
Oh.
So that's it. Let's see how you did.
Oh, I got like a 40%. This is bad, guys.
You got five. The quiz is grading you as, quote, not bad, but let's hope your wagon has a real doctor.
Oh, I do. This is perfect. Okay. I do have a real doctor. He's on an accompanying wagon. And if enough people die, we'll put the wagons together. It'll just be one wagon again.
Yeah, yeah. So you got a solid 50%er on that one.
Hey, you know.
So all the more reason for us to now go into some of these diseases. How's that for a segue?
Mm-hmm.
Beano's dysentery. Fucking hell. Why don't people just look after themselves?
So, dysentery. This is like the Oregon Trail, the quintessential disease. This is like spawned a whole generation of memes. This is the you have died of dysentery. If you've ever heard that and wondered where that came from, it's the Oregon Trail game. You have died of dysentery. This is still like seared into my mind all these years later. Like, how many times have you received that message on a crappy old Mac computer? You have died of dysentery.
So many.
So in the game, someone in your party almost always dies of dysentery. Always. It was so common that it became a meme. And if you don't believe me, go look it up. There's plenty of very delightful you have died of dysentery memes.
I think technically it's probably the first meme. It was just like a screenshot that was from the game. Like, it just says that. So
those messages they would leave on rocks. So those were the original memes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sucked when you got the same one over and over again.
Yeah. So despite this kind of a humorous second life that dysentery has taken on, it was much, much worse than this punchline would have you believe. It was actually a terrible, debilitating disease. And as Oregon Trail historian and veteran Francis Parkman wrote, it was, quote, too serious a thing for a joke, end quote. But we're going to do our best anyway.
Yeah.
So this is a diarrheal disease. contracted when people consume food or water that has been contaminated with infected feces, aka poo. So in the Oregon Trail days in the mid-1800s, dysentery, aka shigellosis, was not as widespread on the trails as some of the other diseases, but it was quite serious. During the 19th century, dysentery was actually a bigger problem on the Civil War battlefields. So this was not as big a deal on the Oregon Trail. It was more of a Civil War thing, if you can believe it.
Mm.
This disease thrives in hot and humid weather. Okay, so is this where the expression swamp ass comes from? I don't know. Maybe, because dysentery lives in the colon and causes bloody, loose excrement. The rise of dysentery in the 1800s was partially due to the fact that people had a taste for warm cow's milk that was not pasteurized, could become easily infected, and became basically or was an ideal incubator for this pathogen.
Yeah.
So because people were, you know, had loose excrement and were also fond of drinking warm cow's milk, you can see the conditions are just right for a dysentery outbreak. Wow.
Yeah, that sounds, I mean, I don't know about you, but I've never, like, I don't remember being a baby and liking warm milk, but I forget, like, a while back, just as, like, a joke to myself, because that's what I do when I'm bored, I warmed up some milk to, like, try to put myself to sleep, because that's a thing that people say, and it is gross. It is gross, gross. I couldn't, like, I got, like, one sip in, and I was like, it was not good.
I think you go to sleep because you just end up poisoning yourself.
Yeah, you're just getting
just getting dysentery, and you have to like you have to go into a coma.
Yeah,
I think that's what it is. Yeah, so there's a misconception that you know, these people on the trail, and I was one of these people, were by themselves. But like I said, the height of the trail, these campsites could become very crowded. The trail itself could become very crowded. Lots of people there. And there weren't a lot of like well-watered places to camp. So, you know, nice, clean, potable drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
The places that did have water of any kind would become congested with people. And if one of those people was infected, the disease could quickly spread through the water supply. That's dysentery on the Oregon Trail. Now dysentery is a threat mostly in the developing world. There's no effective vaccine. And recent strains are actually becoming increasingly resistant to antibiotics, which is the only proven line of defense. So basically, if you get dysentery, you take antibiotics and you drink a lot of fluids. But there's an evolutionary arms race between the pathogen and the medicine, and they are becoming resistant. Don't worry about it as much because we have, like, you know, water kind of purity standards, but it's still an issue in some parts of the world.
Yeah, and it's pretty wild because, I mean, we're not developing new antibiotics at, like, a rapid rate. Like, we've slowed considerably about creating new antibiotics because there's just not as big a market for that. But what I find equally terrifying, I don't know about you guys, but I think it should be illegal for you not to have, like, a fan or some kind of noise maker in your bathroom. Like, imagine, like, not only is it that you're going to be sick, but also... you can't go anywhere to get away from people when you're having this awful bouts of diarrhea and vomiting and being just like feeling disgusting. You're just like, oh, let me walk 10 feet away from everybody and just like die.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And notice in the packing inventory that I went through earlier, nary once did I mention toilet paper.
Nope.
Let that rattle around in your mind.
Yep, you just find the nearest bit of bark, and you know, you let her do her business.
We got any extra bacon, Pa?
Yes, we do. Oh man!
Oh, goody. So let's do our next disease.
Mm-hmm.
Luke is sick with typhoid. Fucking hell, Luke.
So, typhoid. Woohoo!
Yeah, typhoid fever. This is another disease caused by a bacterium that is contracted by consuming contaminated food or drink. The bacteria is shed, quote unquote shed, in an infected person's stool or urine for days and sometimes weeks, which can result in outbreaks. So on the Oregon Trail, the pioneers would contract typhoid, like many other diseases, from contaminated drinking water. And once an infected person starts shedding the bacteria, that actually take up residence in the infected person's blood and intestines, the outbreak would commence. This would cause a really high fever, and actually was even more serious in warmer months, and proved to be a significant source of mortality on the trail. So was a real killer then. Now it's still a killer, though, again, not as much in the Western world because it's preventable with good sanitation, antibiotics, but people can still get it when they are traveling to developing countries that don't have these sanitation standards. It's now very, very rare in the United States, approximately 400 cases per year, But 75% of those cases are required through travel and not not local. So it's not really a thing that we care about too much in the U.S. But if you were an Oregon Trail pioneer, this was a thing.
Yeah, that does not sound fun at all. That sounds pretty miserable. Yeah. And it's not like, and again, like they're shedding this through their, you know, their feces and urine. It's not like today. Yeah. They didn't have like sanitizer after they went to the bathroom or like, you know, any of that. We just talked about no TP. Lots of very quick passing of the baton here for old typhoid.
So, now we're on to another bacterial disease, diphtheria. But this one, thankfully, is not spread through the dookie. This is spread from person to person through respiratory droplets, so coughing and sneezing.
Oh.
So if people aren't excreting pathogens out, you know, their bottom, they're basically expelling pathogens out of their nose and mouth.
Out of every orifice. You know?
Coming from all angles. Also, this disease could cause cutaneous lesions, which is just a fancy way of saying skin, like gnarly skin things.
Mm-hmm.
That's technical, I think. those can also be infectious. So it's basically coming into close contact with people. Back in the trail days, the airborne bacterial disease, diphtheria, would usually first begin or show up in the nose and throat as a respiratory disease, but could also surface and manifest as these really gnarly skin lesions. So do yourself a favor and look up Google diphtheria skin lesions, cutaneous skin lesions, and treat yourself.
Nope.
Because these consisted of a gray fibrous material that would grow either like in these kind of lesions or over your airways, which would cause difficulty breathing, obviously, and sometimes uncontrollable drooling, as well as a deep cough and the chills.
Ugh.
Yeah. So you can just kind of imagine a sick person on a wagon bumping along, just like drooling and wheezing and like, God, just like, oh, kill me.
You know what? What was that lady's name? Markham? Maybe she wasn't wrong, you know? Maybe. Starting to feel like if this was day 8 and this is what's going on, maybe she's right, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But she's just seeing this stuff left and right. She's seeing grandpa's got diphtheria. He's drooling. You know, grandma's got typhoid and just she's, you know, she's like, I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm done. So this was actually more common in the winter months. And prior to the introduction of the vaccine that we now have for it, about 100 to 200,000 people a year in the United States would contract this disease, which is, I'm assuming, grossly underreported. So it was a disease that was pretty relatively widespread. Now we have a routine childhood immunization that has basically wiped out diphtheria in the United States. So this is part of the DTaP vaccine that kids get. DTaP is diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis. That's why we don't really suffer from this Oregon Trail disease now, is because of the vaccine. There are basically no cases in the U.S. or very, very few, but it is still a problem, again, in crowded nations with poor hygiene. But nowadays, it's not as fatal as it was back in them days. And...
because the measles, fucking hell. How'd you solve measles?
Where would we be without measles? Measles, our most highly contagious of diseases, with an R-naught weighing in at 18, meaning for every one pilgrim that got measles, they on average would spread it to 18 other pilgrims. A very, very contagious respiratory disease caused by a virus. You're all wondering, get to the viruses. Well, we've got to the viruses. So those are the bacteria. Measles is spread by a virus. Spread from person to person, and it's so contagious that, especially amongst children, that if a child is exposed to it and has not, obviously, back in those days, did not receive an immunization, will almost certainly contract the disease. So you can be exposed to, you know, COVID and not get sick. You're not just 100% guaranteed to to get sick. But with measles, it was almost a sure thing that if a kid is exposed to it, that kid's going to get sick. So this was a disease that spread very quickly through the United States in the 19th century. It was not the measles itself that got you, but it was complications like bronchitis, pneumonia, that really made this life-threatening and would very easily spread in crowded wagon trains because of these contaminated droplets, sneezing, coughing, and then wiping your boogers and flicking them at people, as I'm imagining that was like the only game that they had back then. the old booger shooting game.
It was their version of like the little football game where you like folded it up to make the triangle and you flicked it to make it go over your friend's hands. Yeah. That was theirs.
They had, yeah.
Yeah, got to use the bugs.
Yeah, they didn't have those little triangles. They had boogers, so that's what they did. Also a great way to pass measles. But now there's a vaccine. This is part of the MMR, measles, mumps, rubella thing. Once the vaccine was made available, you saw this dramatic drop in cases in the U.S., but recently there's been an uptick because of the spread of anti-vaccination and people being silly.
Yeah, so if you have friends or family members who are against vaccinations, have them listen to this episode. Hear about what you get when you don't want to be vaccinated, the types of diseases we could bring back. You want hairy, whatever, over your windpipe? Hairy, disgusting, growths? No, you don't.
So I got an idea for a study. The anti-vaxxers versus the people that choose to vaccinate their kids, what proportion of each played Oregon Trail as a child?
Ooh.
And I'm wondering if there's a difference. If, like, the anti-vaxxers were less likely to play it. Like, they played Tetris or whatever.
Yeah, they were playing, like, Minesweeper instead.
Yeah, because we got indoctrinated early that these are scary.
Yeah.
We need to, like, do something.
We knew.
We're woke.
Ugh.
And speaking of woke,
we are on to our final disease of the evening.
Adam is cholera.
Cholera. The most deadly of the diseases on the Oregon Trail. So this is the question that I quizzed you on. This was the number one killer.
Oh, man.
This was it. This was the pinnacle pathogen.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah. This was another diarrheal disease. So, God, they really needed that TP, but just God.
A few centuries too late. Illness.
Yeah. Caused by a toxigenic form of a bacterium called Vibrio cholera, which causes the intestines to basically become flooded with excess water. And you basically just dehydrate to death. Usually this is transmitted in the feces via contaminated water or food, and existed in epidemic proportions along the Oregon Trail. And was actually part of I'm going to say it anyway, even though this bugs the crap out of me when I read it or hear it, a global pandemic, because, pandemics are global by their definition. But it was exactly. Part of an overall, so I'm not going to go too into this because I think cholera deserves an episode in and of itself someday.
Yep.
But cholera basically spreads worldwide in these waves. So there's like ongoing, there's like a series of cholera pandemics that you can count backwards in time. So, this was one of the pandemics of cholera that just happened to sweep across the Oregon Trail as well. You got watery, continuous stream, a waterfall of diarrhea, which causes severe dehydration and often death. The greatest cause of diarrhea, which has been proven to be so fatal on the road, has been occasioned in most instances by drinking water from holes dug in the riverbank and along marshes. Immigrants should be very careful about this. So saith Abigail Scott, June 8th, 1852.
Easy for you to say, Abigail Scott. You're not 4 months into a trek across the country and you come across no water other than this marsh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think actually she was part of it. I think this is from her diary witnessing it. And she's like, everyone's got the bubbly guts because they're drinking water from holes dug in the riverbank.
Mm-hmm. And she's like, not me.
No. Although probably her at some
point. Yeah.
the only available treatment at the time and in the game was a medicine known as laudanum.
Oh.
AKA pure opium.
Oh, man. But
I think this is just to pacify you. Just
yeah.
To like quit, just to get you to quit your griping. Like, you know, because this sounds like a horrible way to go. What else can you do but just give someone a bunch of opium?
Yeah, I told you. I think we talked about it. When I was in Thailand before, I was in like the hill tribes up in northern Thailand. And this sweet old lady who had bleeding gums went to go hand me a piece of like banana leaf almost with this paste in it. And she was handing it to me. And I was only 16 at the time. And I was like, nah, I'm good. I'm not really sure what that is. And then I found out afterwards from the guide, he was like, oh, man, you would have had a crazy night. And I was like, why? He's like, that was raw opium. And I was like, oh, wow.
And you what? You just like eat it? You just like chew on it?
Yeah, they just like put it in their like lips, okay. Like to like have it like soak up. It's pretty wild.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that was the medicine. And, you know, I'm thinking like a whole kind of old-timey medicines expose would be a good future episode too. This is the one also that differed by elevation. So the basically only salvation that a traveler had would be to get to a higher elevation, leaving the plains for the mountains. This is when your disease risk actually goes down.
I wonder why that is.
Yeah, I feel like I should know this, but I guess, I mean, obviously it has something to do with the water contamination, so it must just be something about flowing rivers.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it might be, I mean, you're upstream, not downstream, you know, you're up towards the tops where it's like the feeding instead of down the bottom where it pools. So that, I mean, that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're up at the source versus like at the end of the river where all these pilgrims have been pooping in the water.
And the runoff.
All that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cholera actually still remains a pandemic and it's still found in the world. And it's basically just treated with a whole bunch of fluids and electrolytes and some antibiotics to like help with other infections. And basically your best bet is to sanitize and drink clean water. But this is still a big killer even today. So like Haiti had a bad one after the earthquake. It's found when basically your sanitation systems break down, and cholera is a nasty one. And this was the number one killer on the Oregon Trail. But, you know, dysentery or diphtheria or whatever, dysentery gets all the hype.
Mm-hmm.
But cholera was it. Those are some of the ways that you can die from diseases joyfully playing the Oregon Trail game as a child.
Exactly. And for all of you who are thinking it, because I was spinning my wheels, so you're thinking like, man, what did these people use? There was just so much diarrhea. Good question. So toilet paper was invented in 1857. So the earliest people didn't have toilet paper, but the later people did. So you're like, and it was sold for... When it was first created as medicated paper for the water closet, what a sweet way to say that. Imagine if we still called it medicated paper.
Such a fancy, dainty way of saying it.
And it was sold in packages of 500 sheets for 50 cents a pack. But you're like, okay, but what did these people use? Good question. So the things they used when they didn't have toilet paper were included, but not limited to seashells, tapestries, wooden sticks, and more. So basically anything else they could find.
What about pine cones?
Yeah, it says anything. It said any kind of plant that they could find as well. I just found it funny that they chose seashells for, and this was like livescience.com said seashells.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like it would be my first choice.
Yeah, no, not at all.
I might go give the ox a little shavy shave.
Yeah.
Fuzzy butt. Get some of that hairy hair.
Man. Ugh. But hey, you know, or, you know, you start off, you know, with a pair of pants and you just slowly cut them into shants and shorts, you know, just moving up and down. You've got a long sleeve shirt that becomes a sleeveless shirt. You know, things.
I, I ran cross country. I knew what it meant when a kid would come back from a long run with wearing only one sock.
Yeah,
exactly. You know what that
means. Oh, man.
Okay. Speaking of diarrhea, that was our episode, our mm-hmm. expose, our look into the diseased world of the Oregon Trail video game.
Yeah, and so we do appreciate you jumping on board with us and headed on out west on the Oregon Trail. And make sure, if you like what you heard, head over to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review and tell us what you think. You know, tell us, you know, if you played Oregon Trail back in the day, and if you're part of the Oregon Trail generation, if you're one of us.
Yeah, 5 stars, that's better than gold.
Mm-hmm. And shoot us an email. Send us an email over viralloadpod@gmail.com if you want to hear anything or see anything. And like we said, the game will be in the show notes as well as everything else. Every single time we post an episode, it will be in the show notes. So go ahead and look at the liner notes for those things. And yeah, I learned a lot. I hope you did as well.
Yeah, this was a delightful trip down memory lane. Mm-hmm. I feel so nostalgic.
Yeah.
And also horrified at the same time, which is the best kind of nostalgic to be.
Yep. And so with that, I guess, bye.
We're signing off.
And bye.
Ooh, that was good.
Adam was bitten by a snake. Fuck. Luke is sick with typhoid. Fucking hell, Luke. Everyone is fair. Hopefully this, Beano has dysentery. Fucking hell! Why don't people just look after themselves? Right. Adam's bitten by a snake. Fucking hell, lad! What is it with you and these snakes? Right. Let's go, go, go. Fuck the shortcut. If everyone's gonna die, Luke has the measles. Fucking hell. How do you solve measles, then? Luke is still not better yet, so we need to rest for another 3 days. Come on, Luke. You should have had your measles shot at birth, Luke. For fuck's sake. Luke is well again. Right. Good, good, good. Let's continue. Finish resting. We're all good now. We're all rested. The food is fucked, but we're going. Let's go. No grass for the oxen, and Luke was bitten by a snake. The only person who has been completely fine through this whole journey is Nathan. Oh, I'm very close now, and everyone's doing all right. Everyone is doing all right. Luke, fucking hell, Luke, stay away from the snakes. Fuck's sake. Oh, Luke is well again. Thank you, Luke. Right. Nathan has dysentery. There we go. Nathan has... Oh, everyone is fucking very bad. Everyone is very bad. Everyone is in fair health. Luke is sick with typhoid. Fuck me. No grass for the oxen. Food is flying down once again. 89 pounds of foods. Adam has cholera. Everyone is doing fair. Come on, lads. Stick in there for 600 more miles. Bean was bitten by a snake. You'll have to man up. There's plenty of repair kits in the wagon for snakes. Adam has the measles. Time out. Let's rest. A fire in your wagon has destroyed 14 sets of clothing. 1,401 bullets. Fuck off. How was there a fire in there? We just went over a river. Oh, fuck me. Right. Adam has dysentery again. Fucking hell. Adam's been by a snake. It's fine, he knows what to do. He's been bitten enough by it. Luke is sick. Fucking hell, Luke. We can't rest. Adam, you really need to leave the fucking snakes alone. Luke has a broken arm. Fuck. How do you break your arm?